You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. White sturgeon are an ancient and iconic species native to California. When left undisturbed, these fish, which can travel between salt and freshwater, can grow more than 20 feet long and live 100 years or longer. But the sturgeon population has been on a steep decline over the past few decades, and the most recent survey was among the lowest on record. John Kelly is the statewide sturgeon coordinator for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and joins us now about the threats sturgeon are facing and how the state is taking action. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, John, how does one become a statewide sturgeon coordinator?
Personally, I went to graduate school and worked with sturgeon, green sturgeon, and started in 2000, and then have continued to work with them for the rest of my career. There was a position at the state available, and I ended up in that role.
Yeah. When people think about California fish and conservation, you know, I think salmon kind of bubble up to the top, maybe even Delta smelt come to mind as well. But when it comes to sturgeon, what is their importance to California and the environment?
Well, sturgeon are this kind of iconic ancient species that have been here for a long time. If you were to go back 200 million years to the coastal waters that eventually become California, you'd find something that was recognizably sturgeon-shaped. And if you go back about 50 million years, you'd find a white sturgeon. Tyrannosaurus rex, you don't have to go back about 60 million years. So they've been here a long time. They're a critical part of our ecosystem. As far as their role, they're a large benthic animal that's feeding on the bottom, so they're interacting with all those organisms that are found down there. They're turning over the sediment on the bottom, and also as an anadromous fish that moves into rivers to spawn, spends time in saltwater, they're helping to bring nutrients and nitrogen from the ocean into inland waters.
What do you find exciting about following sturgeon populations in the state?
It's exciting because there's a lot we don't know. So there's a lot of opportunities to direct research or be engaged in kind of the learning phase and the research phase, which is fun.
I would think because they can live so long, that can make it kind of tricky to study them over their lifetime?
Well, certainly. If you think about their lifespan is basically a human lifespan. They don't become mature until they're teenagers, so there's some parallels there. And so any decisions we make, any management decisions we make, it can be decades before we see the actual results of that. And that's very different from an animal like a smelt or a salmon, where we're talking about a few years.
When it comes to the salmon that we're going to, or sturgeon, excuse me, that we're going to be talking about for this conversation, is this the same caviar producing sturgeon?
Yeah, absolutely. So caviar is derived from sturgeon eggs. There's a number of, there's 25 different species of sturgeon around the world. We have 9 in the U.S. and 2 on the West Coast. They all produce eggs, and many of them can produce some kind of caviar, and the grade of it depends on the species. White sturgeon happens to produce a very high-quality caviar. We have a caviar aquaculture industry in the Central Valley that does quite well, produces good quality product.
Given that they've been around for, you know, 200 million years and counting, what kind of range and habitats did they historically thrive and live in California?
So as I mentioned, they're an anadromous fish, meaning that they can move into saltwater, but then they go up into freshwater to spawn. And so their range, they can be found out in the coastal ocean, you know, down into Central California, and then up into Washington and parts of Canada. But generally, they're found in estuaries and rivers, big estuaries and rivers on the West Coast, so the Sacramento, the Central Valley rivers, and then Columbia River, Snake River, Fraser River up in British Columbia. And then they would then historically have spawned several hundred miles up into those rivers or more. That's their original range, and that's been impacted by dams and some of the things that also impact other migratory fish like salmon.
How many species are we talking about?
Well, so we have 2 on the West Coast, white sturgeon and green sturgeon. The green sturgeon is federally listed on the Endangered Species Act as threatened, so they're managed by National Marine Fisheries Service, and now white sturgeon we're paying attention to at the state level.
What drove sturgeon fishing from the early days of California, maybe dating back to the gold rush? Were they popular to catch?
Yeah, there was an early commercial sturgeon fishery starting in our first records actually date to the 1860s. But so in that phase of the first development of California, there was a real boom. Large numbers of sturgeon were captured. It wasn't a particularly high quality food, but it was sold as a meat product and also for the eggs for caviar. That collapsed by 1901. The fishery is basically closed, and it's permanently closed by 1917. And it wasn't until 1954 that we reopened it for recreational fishing only.
Was it just because of overfishing and steep declines in the population why the commercial industry collapsed?
Yeah, it's in that first fishery, they were going very intensely. And it's not a species that can necessarily tolerate that intensive level of fishing because of their long time to maturity and their long lifespan and things like that.
Fast forward to today, or, you know, within recent decades, let's say the last 30 years or so, what has caused the decline in sturgeon populations?
Well, there's a number of factors going on. I think just the biggest is that this is the Central Valley and our rivers is a very managed system. There's a lot of demands on water. We require it for our urban areas, for our bathrooms, you know, for we require it for agriculture, and also the animals require it. And so as we have changed and altered those flows for various reasons, that has impacted fish in general and sturgeon in particular. Additionally, there's other human impacts related to there has been fishing, both legal but also poaching for caviar. There's also contaminants from various chemicals that may have been used and other sources of mortality as well.
Yeah, I would also think that when it comes to water infrastructure, I mean, that's had an impact on salmon runs across the state. That must have a similar impact on sturgeon habitats as well for spawning.
It's certainly a component of it, absolutely, both with dams that may have blocked passage to waters that they used to go to in the past, but also just altering flows, the timing of when flows are high or low and the magnitude, how big those flows are. We have very good evidence that sturgeon really only reproduce well in years of where there's lots of water, big wet years. And those are variable, obviously, but when we step in as humans and alter that and change that, move the water around in different ways, it also interferes with those natural life cycles.
Yeah. You recently did a survey to record the current or recent sturgeon population. I believe this count was from 2024, so last year. What was the population recorded and how does it compare to maybe the peak sturgeon population in California and over the decades?
So we started a new survey, and yes, 2024 was the first year that we ran it, and we just released a report about that, and that'll be hopefully ongoing in future years. We're in the middle of it again right now. The numbers we came up with, so we have historically targeted or paid attention to the range of about 40 to 60-inch fish because those are the fish people were targeting in the fishery.
3 to 5 feet in length.
Yeah. And since that's what people were targeting in the fishery, that's kind of what we tracked. Now we have a different kind of question. Now we're concerned about the overall population. So our new survey kind of looks at the bigger group. But confined to that 40 to 60-inch range, so we can look back historically, our estimate was about 6,500 fish, which is low. The previous estimate that we had been using was about 30,000 fish, and that dates from an average from like 2016 through 2022. Going back further, we would have seen numbers of 150,000 or more fish in that size range. So it's come down.
Yeah, so that's about a fifth of just, you know, less than a decade ago of the population recorded. Was that surprising to you?
It was. Now, I do want to be cautious. This was the first year of a new study. It's a bit of a pilot study, so we're still refining some techniques. And as a scientist, I would feel much more comfortable with multiple years of data rather than looking at one data point. But that is a low number, and it's lower than, frankly, than I probably expected. We did anticipate that there would be a decrease. There was a large harmful algal bloom that caused a big fish kill, fish mortality in the San Francisco Bay in 2022 in the summer. We know that impacted sturgeon as well as a lot of other species. And so this was the first survey after that event. And so I was not hugely surprised that the numbers were lower, but that is a bit lower than I expected.
Yeah. And I can imagine, given that sturgeon don't reproduce until they're teenagers. So something that happened 3 years ago, like an algal bloom, which can be detrimental to this population, the impact of that could be felt for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, too, is most of the carcasses we were finding were large fish, breeding fish. So the important ones are currently maintaining the population. But yeah, any fish that were born that year successfully, we won't see them spawning till 15, 20 years for the first time. And so there is definitely, it's the immediate impact, and then we have to look forward to how that will play out over the years ahead.
I know you want more data to get an accurate picture, but within the survey that you currently have to work with, were there any small points of hope or silver linings in this latest number?
Well, the good news about sturgeon is because of that long lifespan and because they spawn multiple times over their life, unlike salmon, they're not going to blink out. They're going to potentially die out slowly, or we can recover them slowly. And so we were certainly encouraged that we saw a large number of fish that were what we'd consider in the past sublegal, fish that were too small to catch. But those are great. Those are the teenagers that are growing into the population and that can help rebound the numbers in the future. So that's positive. They're still out there. We also still saw some big fish, the big breeding spawners that are really important. As fish grow, the bigger they are, the more eggs they produce. So the big ones are really important. And we saw some of those too. And so they're still there. We still have time to make changes and help these animals.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with John Kelly from the Department of Fish and Wildlife in California about a new survey which shows California's white sturgeon population continues to be in decline. You mentioned that commercial sturgeon has been banned now for about a century and counting, but recreational fishing has been allowed. What are the current limitations for this kind of fishing?
Yeah, sure. So that's been open for a while, and there have been some recent changes. So in June of last year, the fish became a candidate species for listing under the California Endangered Species Act, and that means that we have to protect them from take, from people potentially harming them. That closed the fishery at the time, but then we were able to propose to the Fish and Game Commission to reopen it as a catch and release fishery. So that's our current status as a catch and release only fishery, and it's open for the most part from October 1st through the end of June. There are also some regional specialty timing and regulations, so please check your regulations books. But it is still open for catch and release. It's a wonderful, exciting fish to catch, and so hopefully people still go out.
What makes it so exciting to catch a sturgeon?
Well, they're huge. Right, we're talking about numbers of 3-5 feet bigger than that. They're very powerful swimmers, and so when anglers hook up on them, they'll pull the line out. They'll jump out of the water like a marlin. It's very exciting. It's a lot of work to land one, and so it's kind of a it's an exciting trophy to have under your under your belt if you've typically fished for smaller fish.
I was surprised to learn that Sacramento, Alberta specifically, has been called America's caviar capital, but that's farmed sturgeon, right? Like we're talking about different sturgeon?
So it's the same species, white sturgeon. So back in the 1980s, UC Davis helped develop a sturgeon aquaculture industry, and that's now been a private industry has taken that up, and they produce a high-quality product. The American caviar is white sturgeon. It's focused in the Central Valley. There are a number of farms. It's an exciting business to have here.
You mentioned the restrictions that anglers are facing. What has been the response from them over the past year or so, having to navigate that?
Well, it's mixed. Understandably, people are not happy when we change the regulations and we restrict them from doing things. There's a component of people who have always fished catch and release, and so that's not really a change for them. Most people fish catch and release for the most part, but they like the opportunity to keep a fish once in a while. It's nice to bring back a big trophy, meat for the table. But so there's been some, the satisfaction from some of those anglers, and it's certainly we know it's impacted the guide and captain community. They're trying to sell trips to clients, and clients like to bring something back with them. However, there are thriving catch and release, very lucrative catch and release fisheries in other states on the West Coast. So hopefully we can work with them to build that out.
This also comes as salmon fisheries have also been impacted as well. I would imagine if you're an angler, you don't only fish one type of a fish. So this impact may be compounded, them trying to enjoy something that they're really passionate about. There's an industry attached to this, and they're facing different impacts and challenges and obstacles.
I think that's definitely part of it. Right when we were starting to look at making changes to white sturgeon regulations, also was timed with when the salmon fisheries was closed and the changes were made to rockfish and halibut and some other fisheries. And you're correct. Most anglers target a lot of different things. And so to get this news of all these changes was hard for them. I don't want to tell people not to be able to fish. I don't want to impact their business. I like those things. I want them to thrive. And so that is something that we have to navigate.
So we've been talking about white sturgeon for much of the conversation. You mentioned there are two species. What about green sturgeon?
So yeah, green sturgeon are also our other native species. They historically have always been less common than white sturgeon. And their life history is a little bit different. They spend most of their adult life in the coastal oceans, and they only come into the rivers and the bays to feed or spawn briefly, whereas the white sturgeon are mostly resident in the freshwater and estuaries. So they're out there. Like I said, they're listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act as threatened, which has given them some protection. The population appears to be doing okay, holding steady, maybe slowly increasing. It's a little early to make that statement, but I conservatively optimistic about green sturgeon right now.
And white sturgeon are a candidate to be added to the Endangered Species Act, correct?
That's correct. So we're in the middle of a status review, which is an in-depth review of what we know about the fish and the populations and the risks. And then we'll present that back to the Fish and Game Commission, presumably in I think around January, and make our recommendation as to how we think they should ultimately decide.
Finally, what conversations are you having among your peers to try and get the population to bounce back?
Well, it's a matter of identifying the risks and then trying to mitigate those risks. And some of those things may be things like fishing, but I really don't want to just point the finger at fishermen and say it's just fishing. Fishing is their fault. That's not the case. There's a lot of factors that are contributing to this decline. So we have to look at what those are and figure out how we can reduce those. So whether that's looking at construction or how water is diverted and make sure that we're trying to minimize or mitigate the risks that the sturgeon experience.
Yeah, I would imagine California going through drought years has an impact on sturgeon populations.
For sure. So sturgeon reproduction is very tightly tied to high water years. And so we've just lived through two severe droughts. Those definitely impact the success of sturgeon. And if those become more common, that's also something we're going to have to factor in.
John, thanks for stopping by.
It's my pleasure.
John Kelly is the statewide sturgeon coordinator for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we've been talking about a new survey looking at the declining population of white sturgeon in California waters, which was among the lowest on record. Still ahead, poetry from two competitors of this weekend's Spoken Word Federation is happening. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.